Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the center for what women want here at Car Talk Plaza. What do women want? The question Sigi Freud asked is being asked again today by whom? Our buddies at Cadillac.
Warren, Michigan. Beep, 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 beep. Responding to the economic power and overall influence that today's women wield in the automotive market, Cadillac is redefining its products and its approach to marketing. We can never be successful until we totally understand the woman's market as well as our traditional male market, says John Grettenberger, Cadillac general manager. Women make up 34% of the total luxury market, blah, 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 blah. And then it goes on to explain, look at the paper here. Goes on to explain all the different things that they're doing. For example, putting paper clips on the end of the fingertips of the engineers who designed the inside of the car and the buttons to simulate long fingernails, thus challenging male designers to experience operating the buttons, knobs, and other interior features in the same way that many women with longer fingernails do.
Okay, so we got one, paper clips.
Not only that, not just the product, but even the way they sell. Part of Cadillac's effort to reach women involves creating a friendlier environment at the dealerships. Cadillac has made a significant effort to train all its salespeople in how to demonstrate a sincere concern for women's needs. Not to have a sincere concern, you notice. Just to demonstrate a sincere concern. But, that's it, man. Well, unbelievable.
We have a few additional suggestions. Now, if they really want to win over...
I'm sure you do.
Buyers. One, drop the traditional Cadillac showroom greeting. Hey, Toots, where's your husband?
Yeah.
Two, drop the traditional Cadillac service greeting. Hi, sweetheart, you here to drop off the doctor's car? Three, drop the prices of their cars 30% to reflect the difference in men's and women's wages. So if a guy can buy a sedan DeVille for $41K, a woman can buy the same car for $28.7.
I like it. So I applaud Cadillac for its...
As meager as their efforts are. The paper clips...
Not that it's meager, but, it's like...
Incomplete.
Duh. Where have they been for the last several decades? And they just figured this out now?
Well, where they've been is... Hey, Toots, where's your husband?
I love it. You think they'll stop doing... It's going to be tough to break those guys of that one, man.
It is. Those guys with the white belts.
Hey, Toots, where's your husband?
If you have a question for us about your Cadillac or anything else, you can call us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Linda. I'm in Chicago.
Hi, Linda.
Chicago, so that would be L-I-N-D-A.
That's right.
Yeah.
Your normal Linda.
Yeah.
Yes, you betcha.
What's going on, Linda?
I have a nice 1989 Honda Civic Wagon.
What year?
89.
What kind of a car is it?
It's a blue Civic Wagon.
Civic, okay.
Yes.
Oh, okay. It's
gonna
be
is it a sedan?
It's going to be one of those days.
What color is it?
Oh, it's Linda, blue. In 5 minutes, you'll be gone, but I'm going to be here for the whole show.
I think he's forgotten his medication.
It's taking me a little time to get the hang of this. So thanks for calling.
Well, I'll be patient if you will.
Okay, I'll try. So what about this 89 Civic Wagon Blue?
Well, it's otherwise a very nice car except for one little thing. It's either got vapor lock or something else that causes it to hate short hops in hot weather.
Ah.
I can get in the car, drive to the train, leave it all day on an 85-degree day, come back, and it might not start. I can drive to the store and come back outside in 10 minutes, and it might not start.
Oh, but
really?
But otherwise, right now it's just been great for 2 or 3 weeks.
So this is 89, so this is fuel injected.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And you've taken it someplace, presumably, and they've told you...
She's taken it to the train station.
That's about it. That's
and they've told it. You there's nothing they can do.
It's so unpredictable that I haven't taken it to somebody because
They'll make fun of you.
Yeah.
Well, it's not vapor lock. If it sits there all day long, it's unlikely that it's vapor lock.
I sure hope it's not a compression problem.
No, I don't think it's that either because the car runs okay. I think what it's more likely to be is a bad fuel pump relay... Or a bad fuel pump.
Mm-hmm.
But the only way you're going to find out is to take it someplace where they'll do a fuel pressure test. And if they can't come up with anything bad as a result of that test, ask them to replace the relay, which we assume is the problem. Now, it's possible that the problem is ignition related. But your car cranks okay. You turn the key and it goes wow, 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 wow.
Wow, all day if I wanted to.
Yeah. It just doesn't start up. But it's possible you're not getting sufficient spark. So I would start by taking it in and telling them what the problem is and maybe leaving it there for a few hot days to see if they can reproduce the problem. And if they can, they'll be able to determine if it's a fuel problem or a spark problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect it's going to be a fuel problem. And I'm leaning toward it being a bad fuel pump relay. That's my guess.
Well, you realize, don't you, that the fuel pump relay is the cure du jour.
Oh, is it? Cure du jour.
Yeah. I mean, you've come up with fuel pump relay for the last 10 people who've called.
I have?
Yeah. No matter what it is. Air conditioner doesn't, I would change the fuel pump. Did you buy stock in a fuel pump relay company?
Should I?
I would.
Maybe. Good luck, Linda.
Well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-8 I have given that answer a few times.
You have, yes. You have.
Well, tis the season for it.
Well, yeah.
And I did, I mean, I really, in my heart, I feel she has a bad fuel pump. But I didn't want to tell her that. I didn't think she could take the bad news.
No. But possibly, I mean, what's good about that is that probably if they do the fuel pump relay, the fuel pump test, it will show up even though the car is starting. It may well show
up
she may as
have weak,
not enough pressure.
Low pressure. That's what we
so
hope.
So if you've got low blood pressure, then that's what the problem is.
And put a relay in while you're at it. It can't hurt. 1-888-CAR-TALK.
But it'll just waste money.
That's 888-227-8255.
But it goes to the Mechanics, Widows, and Orphans Fund.
Yes.
And that's not bad.
No, that isn't. Hello, you're
especially
on...
since they're all on boats.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, guys. This is Marvin calling you from beautiful Bar None, Wyoming.
Bar None.
Bar None? That's the name of the place?
That's the name of the town.
Okay.
A-U-N-N, not N-O-N-E.
Oh, N-U-N-N. Bar None. What does it mean?
It was once upon a time
a ranch. A ranch, right.
Owned by a man named None.
None, and it was
if
called the Bar
None. If you owned a ranch, your name was None, you'd name it the Bar None.
Yeah. Sure. That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So, what's up, Marvin?
There was a ranch out here in Boston, and people don't realize it, but we had ranches here in Boston, too, and the guy who owned the biggest ranch around here was called Angrill.
Angrill?
Yeah. So he had Bar and Grill.
You sucked me in on that.
I'm sorry, but what do you want on the spot? So
the
what's up, Marvin?
Is maintenance schedules.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The operator's manual that come with every automobile lists the maintenance schedule period in miles or months or some time period.
Yeah.
Or kilometers sometimes.
Using the miles and skipping the months.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know if that's going to cause some long-term damage.
Well, actually, the reason that they include the months is for the people who don't drive much. And if you don't drive much and you waited for the miles to show up, the dealerships would go hungry.
Well, that's what I figured it was.
There would be a national crisis.
Yeah.
There would be an economic, what do you call that, shutdown, so to speak.
Meltdown, even.
We would revert to a primitive state.
Yeah, I mean, you could reduce the number of miles that you drive, but you can't stop the clock from ticking or the calendar pages from turning.
It's some kind of money-making scam.
Oh, of course.
Well, no, not entirely. For example, you know, if you drive your car 2,000 miles a year, according to your schedule, if you use just the miles, then you would change the oil every 3 years.
Well, that's one thing that I do.
Which would send oil prices plummeting.
I wouldn't want to do that.
You wouldn't want to do that. Right.
So you would obviously want to change the oil using the month schedule, which would tell you probably to change it every 6 months.
But the real question is, what are the things that actually deteriorate or wear out as time passes, even if you're not using the car?
Precisely.
And it's not that simple to figure what those are. What about belts and hoses and stuff? Well, I mean, it's possible that the environment actually has some effect on them. So that the time for that one does make some kind of sense. But the brakes, for example?
Well, not in Bar None. There's no adverse environmental effect.
Not. Yeah.
In Bar None. I mean, the air is pure. The sky is big. What else happens out there?
And the haircuts are few and far between.
And no one notices except the antelope.
Exactly. So, I mean, you do have to use a little, I guess, common sense. But if you stick with the miles, I think you're great.
Okay.
Yeah, it's especially true if you stick with the mile thing when you're driving an average number of miles per year. So if you're driving 10 or 12,000 miles a year, forget the other things.
Or even five.
Yeah, I think it's about 8 or 10,000
That's
a year.
That's perfect.
What kind of a car is it? We never asked.
It's Old Civic.
Yeah.
Got about 40,000 miles on it.
Well, I would take exception to one thing, the timing belt replacement.
Yeah. In what way? How would you take exception to that?
I would make sure that
in the opposite direction.
I would make sure that right that you err on the side of caution, and that is if you if it took you 10 years to drive 60,000 miles, I would certainly want to change that belt before 10 years had elapsed.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha.
So every 5 years is enough.
Good enough. See you, Marv.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Sure.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Louise in Havertown, Pennsylvania.
Where town?
Havertown, Pennsylvania.
Havertown?
Haver, H-A-V-E-R.
That's right.
Like Havertown.
Yeah, well, you guys would say Havertown.
Why wouldn't you?
Well,
because she lives there and she knows it's pronounced Haver.
Havertown, right? We're right outside of Philadelphia.
I thought that was Philadelphia.
Philadelphia? I don't know.
What's up, Louise?
I have an 89 Olds Cutlass Sierra, okay?
Yeah.
And every time we put the brake on, we hear a loud clunk.
Oh.
Now, I have had it to three different mechanics, and they all assure me that nothing is wrong with it. When we put the brake on, the clunk is in the comes through on the door side of the passenger, and sometimes I can even feel something moving under there. But everyone tells me there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, first
does the clunk... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, of course something's wrong with it.
Well, that's how I feel.
Well, you're absolutely right.
I mean,
And the next guy that says to you there's nothing wrong with it, tell him he's a moron.
They said they can hear it. They agree it's there.
Yeah.
Well,
and the only thing that I... You know, we had to have a new fender put on. Not long... This has been going on for almost a year.
Really?
And the last fella, it was like a month ago, he said that every one of the bolts to the fender, they were all loose, so they have to come off. So he fixed those. You know, I keep thinking, well, maybe they left something in there and there's something, you know, clunking.
Oh, did this noise begin after they did the fender?
Yes.
And are the guys who are telling you that there's nothing wrong the same guys who did the fender?
No. No, I went to a brake shop.
Ah, that's your mistake. Ah, Louise. Good God, Louise. You went to a brake shop?
$400.
By what right did you go to a brake shop? Who the hell are you to go to a brake shop?
Why? I put my foot on the brake.
Yeah, but see, you diagnosed the problem already in advance. That's why you're in so much trouble here.
I see.
And I'm here to help you, Louise.
Okay, please. I want to
I'll be going out for coffee.
No, see, when you... I realized that it happened when you stepped on the brake.
Yes.
But you then concluded that the noise had to do with the brake. You went to a brake guy. It's like you got a pain in your stomach. You go to a stomach guy.
Right.
And the stomach guy doesn't know what's wrong because actually it's a back problem that's causing your stomach to hurt. And the stomach guy says, there's nothing wrong with your stomach because it's your back.
Right.
Yeah, so you got to go to a general practitioner first to find out what kind of specialist you have to go to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I suspect you have a bad control arm bushing someplace.
Out of the tens of thousands of pieces of a car, right to a control arm bushing.
I mean, I knew it wasn't like the speedometer or the volume knob on the radio. I knew it wasn't either of those.
Limited those right away.
Yeah, I knocked those right out of the picture. And my vast experience suggests that it's something akin to that.
Uh-huh.
But it's probably something in the front suspension that's causing the noise. But I wouldn't go to a suspension specialist. Like Tommy says, you want to go to someone who covers all the disciplines.
Someone who doesn't have preconceived notions. You know?
Right? And someone whose scope isn't limited.
Yeah.
Okay.
And someone who's open-minded and say, look, I have a noise, and it occurs when I step on the brake, but I don't think it's the brakes.
Don't even say that. Just say, I have no idea about nothing. You tell me where the noise is coming from.
And it always helps to say, I want to fix it no matter what it costs. The few customers that we have, still,
right.
who take that position are treated very well.
The other question is, the steering wheel was very loose. Would that give you any...
See, Louise, you know more than you think.
Yeah, you could have a loose rack and pinion mount.
You could have a bad tie rod end.
Yeah. Take it, you know, I'm going to suggest you take it to the dealer. And I bet you they're going to figure it out in 10 minutes.
Oh, well, that would be great.
But get it fixed because it has the potential to be dangerous.
It does have the potential to be dangerous. And all joking aside,
yes.
I wouldn't mess around. Take it tomorrow.
All right.
And certainly between now and then, don't drive fast.
Oh, we're supposed to leave for New York City tonight. No.
Don't. I would not take the car.
Take the train.
Really? Anything
to, I know your husband's going to convince you. Tell him you'll meet him there. Take the train.
Yeah, and buy the insurance policy on him.
See you, Louise.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Tommy, do you remember last week's puzzler?
Did it have to do with three clams in a martini bar?
No, that was the joke that Dad told us. was no puzzler last week, but we do have some very interesting things to discuss when we come back.
And I take it that will be in just a minute?
You'll take it correctly. We'll be right back.
Well, I can remember way back in the day, we used to love to drive out west. The roads were long, girls were cool, we took the highway, that's the best. The cars and the bars and the sand and the stars, you know, I won't soon forget. Lord knows those days are gone. Well, the neon signs and the long white lines are all gone, gone, gone. Greasy spoons and all-night saloons are gone. Oh, no, 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 no. Now they got that freeway, honey, but it don't feel free to me. You could drive all day, but still ain't nothing to see.
And even those sausage makers shudder at the thought of how our show gets made whenever they hear us say it. This is NPR.
Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment at your convenience. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit BetterHelp.com/CarTalk to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
There's a multivitamin that can make our lives instantly better. All we need to get its benefits is to step outside.
Nature and parks and greenery helps us be our better selves.
The miracle of vitamin N. In the latest episode of our U2.0 series on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk, of course, about cars, car repair, and the power of the dart.
Yeah. Here's a note from Carol Jenny from Denver, Colorado.
I mean, I can't wait because I don't know what this power of the dart is. Sufficiently cryptic to have aroused my curiosity.
This is good. Dear Tom and Ray, I've been listening to your pleas for good mail, and I thought I would share with you a true story involving both a Dodge Dart and your fair city. In the early 60s, I was a sweet young farm girl attending a mundane Midwestern university. I went to summer school at a very snooty, presumptuous old university in your fair city.
Uh-huh.
What, pray tell, could she be talking about? I wanted to be a biologist, and my school didn't teach about DNA and all that stuff. We were still
working on animal husbandry.
We were still into throwing nets into the ponds and saying bag it and tag it. That's good. I went to a, she doesn't want to divulge the name of the school, so she's, I went to a blank cliff mixer and met a handsome young man from an Ivy League school. Ooh. He asked me to go to a movie with him the next night.
That's the first step.
He picked me up for the date in a strange looking automobile. Being a gentleman, he opened the passenger side door and I climbed in. As I sat waiting for him to walk around the car and get in, I thought, I must make charming, brilliant conversation. What the hell am I going to say? I noticed that this strange car had lots of wood paneling on the dashboard, on the doors, on the glove box. I remember that once my aunt had had an old woody Dodge station wagon that was covered with wood. Being an upwardly mobile farm girl, I was well read. I knew that Dodge had recently introduced a new model car. The handsome young man climbed behind the wheel and started the engine. I said, "Oh, is this a Dodge Dart?" "No," he replied, "it's a Jaguar." You can make that mistake.
Oh, absolutely. Just the other day. As I was driving your car, I said, "Jesus, is there any way to get around?"
It's not in the letters, Donald. I knew you'd like this. Carol continues, "I was mortified. He didn't ask me out on a second date." The story has a happy ending, though. In 1972, I met a man who drove a really crummy old car. We're still driving crummy cars, and we're pretty darn happy. Sincerely, Carol Jenny from Denver.
That is a great story.
Is this a Dodge Dart? Whoopee! I made that mistake. In fact, right now I have a Jag in my driveway alongside my car.
And what do you choose to drive?
I get in the morning and I know I got the wrong key. I got the Jag key and I'm trying to stick it in my Dart and it won't work. And I say, "See, it's so confusing to have these two cars.
So similar.
So much the same." Okay, I give up.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Lisa. I'm from Seattle.
Hi, Lisa.
Is your last name Carr?
No, it's not, actually.
Okay,
good.
Is that a rule to be on the show?
Well, we used to have someone on our staff named Lisa Carr.
Wow, did you hire her just for that?
Just exactly, yeah.
Of course, we hired her for that very reason. What's up, Lisa?
Well, my car is an 87 Honda Civic. It's like the most basic model you can get.
Yeah.
And for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, when I turn it on, it makes the most horrible, embarrassing squeak ever. And it goes away when I drive, when I take off, but it's very loud and very embarrassing.
Gee, what is this? Take it easy on the chumps day? I mean, every question we had has been a gimme.
No, no. It's
a no-brainer.
No, evidently, this is more complicated than we think.
Oh, no, it totally is. Let me give you the long version.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So I was out of the country for a year, and my dad was watching my car. And he had it all fixed up before I got home, took it to these the mechanics they've been going to forever, did a tune-up, changed all the, you know, all the belts, which I'm sure is what you think is the problem. I just drive the car. About a month later, this starts. So I take it to get lubed and oiled, and I say, "By the way, can you fix this squeak? I'm sure just the belt needs to be tightened," you know, thinking that would be the end of my problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's like, "Well, the belt really wasn't that loose, but I tightened it, and really the squeak is there. The problem is that the pulley is glazed." And I'm thinking, why is he talking about donuts? I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So he's like, "And I could fix it, but it would be really expensive, and you should probably just live with the squeak."
No, nay, nay, nay.
I know.
Nay, nay.
Meanwhile, I have the cutest neighbor ever, and I am embarrassed to get in my car and start it in the morning with him out there.
Cutest, you said?
Yeah, he's very attractive, and I've yet to be able to, like, talk to him.
Oh, this is an ideal opportunity
Lisa,
to meet him.
Lisa.
You jump out of the car, you say,
"Throw the hood
oh,
open,
my God, what's
and you
that?
Start crying. I can't take it anymore. I don't know what's wrong with my car.
It was my favorite cat. All right, let's get back to serious business
here. I haven't been unable to grasp it yet.
Yeah. So he says the pulley is glazed,
yeah.
And he says, forget it.
No,
the
pulley.
Expensive. I don't even know what he means.
The pulley isn't glazed.
You have a bare bone. You have no air conditioning or power steering.
I have air conditioning and power steering.
Oh, you have both of those.
Oh, so you don't have a bare bone Civic. You have, in fact, the luxury model.
Oh, is it? God, I would hate to have the bare bone.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it's one of those belts, and the most likely candidate is the alternator, because when you first start the car, most people don't realize this, that rubber actually contracts as it heats up. So the belt is its loosest when it's cold.
Oh. okay.
So it's most likely to slip if it's loose, obviously, when the engine is first started, and it'll...
Right.
And then after you've driven it for a minute or so, or sometimes longer, the noise will go away. Sometimes you'll find that if you accelerate very quickly, rev the engine up very quickly, the noise will come back.
Right.
Well, here's what I think. I think this car, if I'm not mistaken, has a flat grooved belt for the alternator.
Okay.
The belts come in two varieties. There's the classic V belt, which if the belt is looked at in cross section, looks like a truncated V with the bottom kind of cut off.
And then there's the black belt.
And then there's the and then there's the belt that you have on this car for the alternator, which is a flat belt which has a bunch of grooves in it.
Okay.
I think they either put the wrong belt on and are unable to tighten it up enough. And I know that because I've done that myself a few times, and it appears the belt is tight enough, but it isn't.
Okay.
Hence the story about the glazed grooves on the pulley.
Okay.
Because in order to replace this belt, he's going to take the other belts off. He doesn't want to do it because it's a pain, and he's hoping that you'll go away.
Okay. Mm.
Like move to another city. Okay. But I think he's put the wrong belt on. The belt is too long. He needs to take it off and put a shorter belt on, which he can then tension correctly.
I need a new belt.
Yeah, you need the correct alternator belt.
Okay.
And that'll fix it. And you need a date.
I need a date.
With the guy across the street.
Yeah.
What's his name?
You know, I don't even know that yet.
Lisa, you mean you haven't gone and snooped in his mailbox?
Oh, no. Hey, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Lisa.
I know. It's been
right. I got it when you snoop. Take one of the letters.
That's excellent. Isn't that against the law?
Yes, it is. But
okay. No,
all's fair.
It's not against the law if you're doing it for a good purpose.
Right.
And then you ring his bell. Oh, you don't even have to do that. You just go there, you take the letter, and you ring the bell. You don't even take it home.
And you say, hi, Dawn.
Hi, are you Dawn so-and-so? This came to my house. I guess it's yours.
Hi, I'm Lisa.
Because my name isn't Dawn. It's Lisa, and I live right next door. And ain't you a hunk?
And you can say, I used to have a boyfriend named Dawn, but we're no longer together.
An item.
We just broke up.
Yeah, yeah. We just broke up a few months ago.
Yeah.
I think it's better than the belt advice. Yeah,
I think so, too.
I think so, too. This way you don't have to cry.
Yeah, too bad.
But you'll probably get arrested for tampering with the U.S. mail, but it'll be worth it. See you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, do you know what it's time for?
Back to school time. Time to buy our intro to radio textbooks.
No, it's too late for that. It's time to play Stump the Chumps. This is the part of the show where we revisit a previous caller to see if the advice that we gave him or her was far off, far out, or...
For goodness sakes, who's our lucky contestant this week?
It's Ralph from Monroe, Louisiana, and do you remember Ralph?
Geez, you know, I should.
Me neither. Well, Ralph called us back in July because his dashboard was tapping out an SOS.
Weeks ago, I turned off the ignition, and a clicking sound started under the dashboard, and it lasted about 20 seconds, and I turned the ignition back on, and it came back on again. I have a recording of it here that I can play for you. But that's the sound that it
got
makes.
It.
I got it, too. Remember that? There was a quiz show that used to be on when we were kids called Beat the Clock. Can we hear that one more time? Because I'm not so sure. Everyone heard it.
All right, let me see if I can turn it on again.
Down, 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 down. So, do we beat the clock or what?
Well, we told Ralph that under the dash there were vacuum motors that moved ventilation doors, and that one of these doors was stuck or loose.
Well, let's see how we did. Ralph, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, look, before we find out what happened, we need to verify that we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk. Is that true?
That's true.
And that the answer you're about to give here on Stump the Chumps has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of National Public Radio, or the autograph photograph of Bud Collier that we sent to you, and the $20.
You guys are clean.
Oh, that's too bad. So anyway, what was it the door?
Yes, it was kind of. It was the servo motor on the flap that covers that outside air intake for the air conditioning.
That's it.
Good job.
Really? Jeez.
That's what we thought it was.
We did?
Ralph's car is not the one.
With another caller.
Right. We had a different caller who had a similar noise. It sounded very much like this, but it was, he went on and described where he thought it was coming from, but that's not you. Because no. You just described the noise.
That's right. What you didn't get was how much it cost to get it fixed.
Oh, yeah. How much was it?
$300.
Really?
Yeah, they said they had to take the dashboard off.
Yeah. Of course, if you hadn't fixed this thing, you would have cooked your air conditioner.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. And my wife was afraid to get in the car because it was on her side, and she was afraid that something might jump out and burn
well,
or something like that.
Well, she was just using that as an excuse. What's her new excuse going to be? Anyway, thanks for playing Stump the Chumps, Ralph. You're a lot of fun.
Happy to do it. Thanks for your help.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Or if you can't wait, you can stump us right now. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jim Brown calling from Buffalo.
Jim Brown.
What's up?
Well, I need some sound advice.
On a stereo?
No, not quite sound
advice. Oh, not that kind of sound advice.
A little bit.
Oh.
I'm restoring and modifying a 1977 Toyota Land Cruiser.
Mm.
It's got a 6-cylinder engine in it, and I'm pretty close to done.
Yeah.
I was admiring my work with my wife, Martha, and I said, you know, the body's done, the engine's done, the brakes are done. Now I have to make it sound right.
Ha!
She gave me a dope slap and said, sound right is sound quiet. And I said, no, sound right is sound like a 56 Chevy Nomad.
Well,
not,
maybe not.
Not like a Harley.
A 56 Chevy Nomad was pretty quiet, actually.
Well,
except when the teenagers got a hold of them.
Yeah.
And removed the exhaust systems.
My question is, what is the essence of a good sound? Why do men turn their head when one of these go by? And another car will sound like it needs a new muffler.
Yeah.
And how do I get there from
here? Yeah, there's a fine line, isn't there, between sounding like you need a new muffler and having that wonderful low sort of, it's not quite a growl.
No, it's a resonance. It's analogous to hearing somebody with a loud voice or hearing a baritone sing with that richness.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You want that baritone resonance.
Especially for a Land Cruiser because it's Land Cruiser is a man's.
Well, I would suggest in this case that you install a few resonators. To get the resonance. And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot that goes into exhaust system design, not the least of which is considerations about how long the exhaust valves last before they burn out.
Yeah.
Are you aware of that?
Yeah, back pressure is a bad idea.
Too much back pressure is no good because it diminishes power.
Too little back pressure is no good.
Causes the exhaust gas to escape too quickly and thus burns up the valves.
Yeah, and I have to say that this is an art, and it's even completely lost on this modern generation. You must be at least 40, Jim.
Got it.
Yeah, because anyone under 40 has no appreciation for this at all.
No, Jim's over 40.
Oh, yeah.
Way over. Jim's close to 60. You know why? He'd never have enough time to do this restoration if he weren't a geezer. Or money.
Yeah,
so you're close to being a geezer.
He's a geezer.
You probably only have a few good years left. I would do anything you want.
Yeah, forget about the valves. You go for the sound.
Straight pipe.
And I think you're going to have to experiment. I mean, I really don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, it's a tuning thing, isn't
it? Yeah,
it is a tuning thing.
Oh, it really is. I know nothing about it. I mean, you know how I would go about it? I would put in the standard exhaust system.
It's not cutting pieces off.
And then I would get an electric drill, and
I would start drilling holes. I'll drive through a crowd of guys and see how many.
Exactly. You see how it sounds? I think this is going to be an 8-holer.
Good.
Well, if you look in the 4-wheel drive magazines, there are all kinds of ads for, you know, free flow exhaust systems and all that stuff. You may have to spend a few $1,000 and buy some stuff and try it out.
I was thinking of doing it himself, though. I mean,
he's going to do it himself.
Buy anything?
He's going to buy. No, he's got to buy mufflers and pipes and whatever.
Yeah.
You're not going to don't drill any holes. I mean, you weren't taking my brother seriously.
No.
Oh, you weren't.
You've got to buy some of these aftermarket systems, and I'm sure you'll find something that you can adapt to this thing.
Very cool.
Good
I'll
luck,
call
Jim.
You up one day.
All right.
It's a heck of a good question, Jim.
Enjoy. Enjoy your Land Cruiser.
I will.
And your retirement.
And your retirement, right.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Say hello to your mom for me.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, it's time for us to take a short break. Do you know that?
Yeah, I hope I have time to jot down my highlights from this week's show so far. You know, from my memoirs.
Okay, and then what are you going to do with the other 59 seconds?
We'll be back with more of your calls in just a minute.
Oh, engine revver, don't you know your motor sounds real mean? Even though it ain't the fastest car that I have ever seen. Oh, engine revver, don't you know your motor wasn't built for speed? But that's okay, 'cause it's only worth that gasoline scream.
And even those sumo wrestlers run full speed into their radios whenever they hear us say it. This is NPR.
Hey everyone, it's Ophira Eisenberg, and here I'm chatting with one of Queer Eye's Fab Five, Anthony Borowski. What's a culinary deal breaker for you?
Ketchup on hot dogs makes me really uncomfortable.
Listen to NPR's Ask Me Another, the answer to life's funnier questions.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and a brilliant new discovery.
Yes, here's a letter I got from a listener of ours. It says, "Dear Tom and Ray, I wanted to write to express my great joy in a recent discovery. I was surfing your website at work this week and found that all summer you are posting classic Car Talk puzzlers. Boy, is this great. Now we listeners can get our weekly dose of the puzzler without having to listen to the rest of your lousy show. Your thoughtfulness is unmatched. Sincerely, Dad."
Now you're going to discuss the Bard with us?
Right. This is good. Dennis Gittinger from the great cyber world sent us the top plays. I love this. The top plays Shakespeare chose not to publish. Here they are. Fast Times at Verona High. How about Christopher Marlowe, You Can Kiss My Elizabethan Butt. And my favorite, Hamlet 2. Where the hell is everybody? He actually wrote all these, huh?
Oh, he did, yeah. He penned them all, and of course.
That's good. And he didn't think that some of these would have mass market appeal.
No, well.
Yeah. Well, I think today, you know, in retrospect, today, maybe if we can get the manuscripts.
Oh, they're out there. But if they're not, someone's working on them right now. On discovering them.
Okay, now what?
Well, it's time to try and give out some wrong answers. So if you have a question about your car, our number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sylvia, and I'm calling from Chinle, Arizona.
Sylvia!
Who is Sylvia?
Anyway, what's up, Sylvia?
Well, what's up is that a couple of years ago, I lived in a place called Mexican Hat, Utah.
Yeah.
And I was working up there for 3 months, and it was near a uranium mine.
Yeah.
And my car's had this weird problem since then.
And
I know that people have real problems being around uranium, and I'm wondering if cars can get thyroid cancer.
Well, quite the contrary.
Because I think my car has thyroid cancer.
No, I don't think it does.
No?
Well, what are the symptoms?
Again,
my brother is about to answer, unencumbered by the thought process.
Yeah, well, because I know the general theory here, and I have ample evidence to show that not only are cars not
susceptible
to any of the diseases that we that humans have, but quite to the contrary, uranium preserves cars.
Okay.
But go ahead, you tell us what the symptoms are.
Okay, well, what the symptoms are is that when I was out there 2 years ago, it started acting like when I would step on the gas pedal, it would run really roughly for a few seconds, and then it would respond. Okay, mm-hmm. And that I could handle. I could deal with that. And then I went back home, which is Massachusetts.
Ooh.
And then I drove down to Key West.
Wow.
And I was having problems, supposedly, with water in the gas tank.
You on sabbatical?
No, I was in law school. And I was doing internships all around the country.
Oh, how convenient. Key West.
Yeah, well,
come on, Sylvia. Give us a break. I mean, we're gullible, but geez.
Somebody had to do it.
Somebody has to do it.
You weren't there in the winter or anything like that, were you?
I was there in, yeah, I left in the end of January.
Oh, how unfortunate.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I was driving down there, I was having a problem going uphill where it was running really roughly, and then it was going about 30 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. This is a Volkswagen you have?
This is a 82 Volkswagen Rabbit convertible.
Oh.
And now what's happening with it, now that I'm out here in Arizona, is that now it's just gotten worse and worse and worse, and I tried to drive 5 miles up to the canyon here, and I didn't even get there.
So now it's running lousy all the time.
It still won't climb hills.
Right.
But now it's worsened because it won't even go on flat ground anymore.
Right.
So if anything...
it starts kind of skipping, and the what do you call it, the...
I don't know what you call
the
it.
RPM
that stuff
thing.
The tachometer.
Bounces around. It goes down and up and down and up and down and up.
Gotcha.
I've taken it to now 6 mechanics, and they've all taken wild guesses at what this could be.
Wild guesses.
And in the meantime, I've replaced the oxygen sensor, the fuel pump, the fuel filters, the fuel distributor, warm-up regulator, and fuel injectors. And now I'm sort of starting on the electronic system. I've changed the wires a couple times, and I just changed the coil last week, and nothing.
Okay, so does it ever run well now?
Now, no.
Now, no.
Right.
Has anyone put an oscilloscope on this thing to look at what the ignition system is doing? Because I suspect you could have the reason I suspect this is that you have one by one eliminated all the other things
right.
that I was about to suggest, the fuel pump, the fuel filter, the coil. You've dashed my hopes with every one of these. And the only thing you didn't mention was the Hall effect sensor.
The what?
Ah.
Great. Something else to spend money on.
I haven't even read about that yet.
No. Well, you're about to hear about it.
No, I believe that this the electronic ignition system in this car is operated. The thing that makes the spark in conjunction with the coil is there's a Hall effect sensor, and that in turn sends a signal to an igniter, which interrupts the flow of current to the primary circuit of the coil, and that's what makes the spark. It's possible that this is faulty. It's just a possibility.
How many miles on this dog?
Oh, a million.
Oh, a million, yeah.
A million.
It actually, the odometer stopped working in Key West, I think.
Key West, that would have been 1996.
There is one other possibility that does come to mind.
Yeah, there is
and
certainly
maybe,
one.
Maybe somebody
back,
hasn't
a back to basics
explored this, and that is that you have a restricted exhaust system, i.e. a plugged-up catalytic converter, which would have explained everything, in fact, why initially the problem was only on hills, and now that it's more plugged up, the problem is all the time.
Okay.
Because if the exhaust cannot get out, you cannot...
The exhaust did start getting loud lately.
Well, that's good.
Okay.
But that would make it better.
You need someone to do a very simple test, and that is to drive the car with the converter disconnected.
Okay.
And see if the problems are all gone.
Okay.
If, in fact, they're gone, then you need a new converter.
Right.
But a plugged-up converter would certainly do all of these things.
Or inadequate spark.
Because of the Hall effect.
Right.
Hall effects. Okay.
Now, I wouldn't go crazy with this Hall effect sensor thing now. It's a lot of money. So you want someone to really do the diagnostic work. So don't just go and replace this.
Okay.
Yeah. No well, more that, wild
I only
guesses.
Mentioned it because everyone else has done everything else to it.
Right. And that may be the trick with finding somebody that has ever heard of a Hall effect sensor out here.
Well, it may be now that the bombardment from the U-238 has somehow disrupted or disturbed the delicate balance of... You know how long it takes an electron to travel through a Hall effect sensor?
Oh, days. Days. And I suppose it's possible.
At least 4 hours.
Your original premise was that it was a thyroid problem, and that would certainly speed up the flow of these electrons, and that would definitely cause this.
So I think you need to get degaussed or something. I don't know what to say.
Get some new crystals and
well, you need
put
to,
them around the car.
You currently live now where? In Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
There must be some place close by that will sell to you for a nominal fee a government surplus Geiger counter.
Okay.
And a normal fee, I mean like 20 grand. But no home should be without one, and I think you may need one.
I once owned a 56 Chevy, which spent many of its days at the Los Alamos Proving Grounds. And as we know, back then in the 50s, we were exploding bombs all over the place. So this car was obviously subjected to some very severe radiation. And this car was blessed. I mean, this thing would not die. And I think it's because the radiation preserved.
Oh, it set up a field around the car.
Set up a holy field around the car so that nothing ever went wrong with it. It lasted forever until my brother sold it for 50 bucks.
And that explains your hair.
That explains my hair,
because you were in that car,
too.
Man, that was it. Now that I think about it, my hair was never like this.
It wasn't until I drove that car.
Stay
I turned into Kramer.
Well, Sylvia, I hope we've helped you a little bit.
Well, you've helped me an awful lot because I have so many mechanics taking guesses that I thought I'd call you and have you guys take some guesses.
Why not?
Yeah. Good luck, Sylvia.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi there.
Hi, who's this?
This is Dana.
Where are you from, Dana?
From Washington State, Kirkland, just by the, what do you call it, the pungent sound?
Pungent.
Pungent.
Pungent sound.
Pungent sound, yes.
Yeah. What's up?
Well, it's my wife's car.
That's kind of a contradiction of terms. It should be pungent smell, shouldn't it? I mean, pungent sound. They don't go together.
They don't go together, do they?
Well,
I never thought of that.
It's impossible for there to be a pungent sound.
No.
Anyway, Dana.
Every time I see it now, that's all I think of. So you've tainted my way of looking at it forever.
We've tainted it, so to speak.
Sorry about that. What about your wife's car?
Well, she's got a Volvo, 86, and... There's something wrong with the way she drives it.
Is it a 740 or a 240?
Is it a 240? Yes, it's a 240.
Yeah.
When she drives it, the brakes do not squeak. When I drive it, the brakes squeak.
Yeah.
So we had a complete brake job done, and the car knows when I'm driving because it squeaks for me and not for her.
Still. Excellent.
You did not have this brake job done at an authorized Volvo dealership. Is that correct?
Was it at an authorized Volvo? Yes, it was.
Well, there goes that theory.
There goes that theory. Okay, we'll have to move on to another call now. Well, we need to talk to your wife because we need to find out what she does. Obviously,
I know what she does. I mean, she drives like my wife drives. My wife also used to drive a Volvo.
Ooh.
That's another story for another day.
Yes.
And my wife drives in such a way that she has what we call a heavy foot. When she starts off, bing, she hits that gas pedal, zingo, off we go, whoopee! Kids go flying into the back seat, dog gets smashed up against the rear window, and she stops the same way. She hits the brake hard. You, on the other hand, are probably a gentle fellow, and you probably start off smoothly and stop smoothly. And when you do that, it makes noise. That's my assessment of the situation. Am I right?
I'll let you talk to her. Hold on.
This is Becky.
Becky. Yes. Now, you didn't hear what I said.
No.
I was trying to describe the way my wife drives, and I was suggesting that you probably drive the same way. And my wife has a heavy foot. She steps on the gas when she takes off, and she zaps away from the stoplight.
As much as one can zap away in a Volvo.
Considering that it's a Volvo.
No, I don't do that.
And when she stops, she hits the brake pedal hard to stop. She doesn't
stop. That's how my husband drives.
Oh, I got it backwards, huh?
Yeah.
All right, maybe we can salvage this.
All right, get me out of this, will you? I mean, my experience has been that the brakes make noise if you're too gentle with them.
Oh, that's strange. He's not gentle at all.
He's not gentle, and they make noise.
Yes. It's hysterical, because we'll be in the car less than 5 minutes, and they start going...
Really?
And they don't... I've had the car 2 years, and they don't do it for me before we got new brakes or after.
And if the brakes are making noise, and you were to all of a sudden take over the driving, would you then be able to drive it without their making noise?
It's possible. I'm capable of almost anything. I analyzed it, and I'm the one that picked the Volvo, and it wasn't his idea.
Oh, so you think that he drives it in a manner that betrays his dislike of the car.
Maybe, or else it's psychological. The car knows.
The car knows that he didn't like it in the first place,
mm-hmm.
and so it's going to go out of its way to make him miserable.
It's so weird, you know.
Yeah, cars don't know, however. We know that. I mean, intuitively, we know the car doesn't know, but there must be something peculiar about the way he drives, and usually, what my brother said is correct, those people that apply pressure gently to the pedal for some period of time cause the brakes to squeal. So maybe you're driving it with a harder pedal than you think you are, and he's driving it more gently. Answer this one question. This is a very important question. Your husband obviously carries a wallet, does he? Does he carry change in his wallet? Or does he have
sometimes. He never makes change.
Well, we know that. Men don't make
men
change.
Men don't do that, yeah.
So he doesn't he doesn't carry nickels, dimes, and quarters in the wallet.
You carry change inside your wallet sometimes? Yes, he does.
He does?
Oh,
yep. I was afraid of that.
That's too bad.
You know why?
Why?
Because he's a geek.
Oh.
Geeks carry change in their wallets, and if you're a geek, then you drive like a geek. And he drives like a geek, and that's why the brakes squeak.
Don't let him drive
anymore. It all fits. It's in the giant. Einstein worked on this for 25 years. The universal geek theory.
And all the pieces are slowly fitting together.
Yeah.
Yes, it's taken us 20 years to evolve and refine and mold this theory. But now I know that he doesn't drive the way he's supposed to.
Right.
He's driving like a geek, and he's stepping on the pedal too gently, and that's why the brakes are making noise.
Okay. And don't let him drive anymore, Becky.
Yeah,
okay.
Keep him out of the car.
Sounds good to me.
I never let a geek drive my car. That's why my brother never gets in it. See you, okay. Becky. See you, Dana.
Thanks.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to
kidding.
Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our theme music is by David Dog Risman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, still celebrating his Tour de Fork victory, is John Bugsy
Tour
Lawler.
Tour de Fork!
Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our director of new product repair is Warren T. Myfoot. Our pseudonym consultant is Norm DePlume. Our dermatologist for teenagers is Don Pickett. Our Japanese chef is Benny Honda. The Car Talk musical director is Donna E. Mobile. Our divorce attorney is Carmine, Not Yours. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. And of course, as always, our Russian chauffeur is Bikoff and Dropoff. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howes, Louis Dewey, known to the pigeons with digestive problems in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Remind me to tell you a story about that. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tabbert Brothers, and Don't Drive Like My Brother.
And Don't Drive Like My Brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1933, download classic Car Talk episodes, and help us get rid of the Car Talk CDs and t-shirts sitting in my basement all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, we're here to help you clean up your driveway. Got an old car that's seen better days? Well, the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program will tow it away for free and send the proceeds to the NPR station of your choice. Do it now before your local neighborhood watch group labels your car an eyesore and plants geraniums in it. Turn your car into the programs you love. Find out how at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though NPR's insurance agent doubles our slander premiums whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.